And I got out. I come running back to you. I come running back to you. Yeah, I come running back to you.
Welcome to the Wayne Bennett Podcast, celebrating West Virginia's people, places, and the culture of Southern Appalachia. Now here's your host, Wayne Bennett.
Welcome to Wayne Bennett's podcast. My name is Wayne Bennett, and this is episode 101, and it's May the 5th, 2023, Cinco de Mayo. And our guest today is from the Bay State, the Baked Bean State, from Massachusetts. He's a talented musician, audio engineer, producer, and a devoted family man, Mr. Dave Shrewsbury. Welcome, Dave.
Thank you, Wayne. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
You started piano lessons when you were about five.
Yes, I did.
And
you've done your research.
and you had some excellent piano teachers. Can you know?
Absolutely, yeah. So the ones that stand out. This is funny. I thought of making a list because I knew you were going to ask that question, and I hate to leave anyone out. But my musical start really happened in church. Going to church with my family and just sort of being fascinated by watching the piano and the organ. And I would come home to my grandmother's piano and sort of pick out what I pick out the melodies I'd heard on her piano. And that's when my parents kind of sort of gently encouraged me to, you know, would I want to take piano lessons? And they didn't have to ask twice. I said, yes, absolutely. And all of my teachers have been just absolutely phenomenal and just so many good, so many mentors over the years. But starting with Mark Mathias, who was a choir director at the church at the time. And then I kind of followed up with junior high and high school with Vicky Pashuda here in Beckley. And she was absolutely phenomenal. She encouraged me to compete in piano competitions, which isn't something I had a huge desire to do. I'm not really a competitive person. And I love the sound of your dog drinking water in the background. That's great.
I usually put the water on.
That's quite right. I love it. It adds to the wonderfully casual nature of this. It's great. But Vicky sort of encouraged me to compete in these piano competitions. And, you know, I went along with it. And at the time, I was just like, ah. And looking back, that was such an incredible help in terms of being able to perform under pressure. And it really kind of set me up for a lot of success.
Now, I know a couple of names that people that, like Vicky Pashuda, yeah. Dan Spurgeon.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Betty Wilson. And those people kind of helped you along the way.
Yeah, three others I'd love to just briefly touch on. Dan Bailey has been a teacher, a mentor, and a longtime friend. I think the world of Dan. And he was my first guitar teacher several years after I started piano. I also had an interest in guitar, and my mom was friends with Dan in high school, I believe. And this was out when he taught at Pied Piper at the Crossroads Mall. So I would go out there and sit in that tiny little room upstairs. And so I think I stuck with it initially for about 3 months because, you know, your fingers develop calluses as you play. And my little dainty piano hands did not like the calluses from the guitar. But then a few months later, I think maybe more time went by, and I said, you know what, I want to do that again. So then I went back and stuck with it. So Dan has always treated me like a professional. This is a theme actually for all of these great teachers, both Dan Bailey and then Daniel Spurgeon up at United Methodist Temple, who as a young child, they never talked down to me. They never, they never treated me like anything less than a professional musician, and just, they would just kind of push me to be the best version of myself. And really, they knew what I'm capable of doing and would just encourage me to go a little beyond that. And that's been a recurring theme.
Well, Dan, we had Dan on here before.
Yep.
And we were talking about you. And Dan, and this is a quote, and he said, I don't throw the word prodigy around much, but Dave has a contentious understanding of music at an early age. And And he understood how music worked. And that's a pretty big compliment.
Yeah, oh, I remember I listened to that podcast. That was the first one of your podcasts I heard because I saw Dan Bailey. I'm like, oh, I've got to hear what Dan has to say. I was very surprised to hear my name on it. And yeah, I still remember where I was sitting and I heard that comment. And it did, yeah, it kind of floored me because, I mean, I think the world of Dan. I think he's a tremendously talented musician. I mean, I don't think, I know he's a tremendously talented musician. And so that's a huge compliment from him. And yeah.
Now you say you weren't a real competitive person. But you kind of tall for your height.
Yeah.
Did anybody ever approach you to try to get you into basketball?
So many times. You have no idea. And then, but that I had a way of ending that right after it started. They then would see me play basketball, and then that they were like, "Never mind, never mind." Now I'm both of my kids play sports and I love it. I think it's great for them. I played Little League baseball and I enjoyed it at the time. And then I enjoyed it up until the point that I didn't. And I guess I'm really not much of a competitive person. And there's a point that it goes a little past just kind of fun playing a game to like real serious. And I'm not a sports guy. It's never been my thing. And I did enjoy baseball, but basketball when I would always come up with excuses in gym class to get out of, you know, playing, yeah, out of pretty much anything. My poor gym teacher, I can't remember. Would it have been Barksdale? I don't know. I don't know who my gym teacher would have been at high school, but I passed gym, but I don't remember ever doing anything in it. So
I remember when you were at Park Junior High,
yeah,
and I never had you in class. I wish I had him, but I remember that all the concert, band concerts,
oh, yes,
or chorus. You're usually playing keyboards,
yes,
most of the time.
Yeah.
And I knew who you were. But who was the band director at
Candy Mention. Candy
okay,
Mention. And
Candy
I cannot
Mention.
Leave her out. She was one of the most influential educators of my life, I would say. She is a person who expected a lot. She's the first teacher that I remember just truly expecting every student to give her their best. And she whipped that band into shape and we were state champions. I mean, I don't remember exactly, but I remember winning the state band competition with Park and just.
Now you mentioned the competition that, piano competition,
yeah,
and you were actually, it was the National Education Association in Chicago.
National Music Educators Association.
Yeah, music.
Yeah, and it was, I believe I won some in West Virginia. I should really remember this. I went to Chicago. I competed there. I don't remember where I placed. I didn't win that. But
well, from what I've heard, you had like five superior rankings.
Yeah, I know in the West Virginia Music Educators, I think you were ranked like one, maybe it was 1 to 5 and 5 was superior. And I believe I pretty much hit the superior rating with all of those.
Now, when you were in high school,
yeah,
you were involved, I know, with the with one group called the Improv.
Oh, Improv, yes.
Lou White. And
oh, my gosh, Lou.
Jeff Sturgill.
We had so many wonderful people through that. That was another one of those experiences that really set me up for what I do in my life. You know, a lot of us, when we started Woodrow, and it really kind of started at Park Junior High, just we played at some of the basketball games at the Armory. The I don't know if it was the band or the jazz band, but we just went off to the side and four of us, we called ourselves Four Sax Jazz. And it was like a saxophone quartet. And we would just make up little things and just kind of play off to the side. And that was really the birth of improv. And then I think the next year at Woodrow, we were in the marching band and the jazz band. And that wasn't enough for us. We started, we had like a free period. And Woodrow had this wonderful room with these like vintage Wurlitzer keyboards in it. And I think there was a drum set. And we would just go in there and sort of start making up songs. And this was, Jeff Sturgill. We've always had a core group of members. And then as some people have come and gone, we've had different rhythm players. Like we had Lou Whitener on drums. At one point we had Brian Rainey on drums. We've had Roger Akers on bass. We had Paul Almond on bass.
I saw where you guys had played in a had a festival at the old Y, the Memorial Building, one time, and it was there was groups like Agents of Change and Acoustic Cafe and, some of those guys. You've played jazz, pop, rock, funk, R&B, blues, country. Which one do you like the most?
Oh man, that's it. Almost impossible. I play a lot of the styles well. However, I will always be a fake jazz player. Jazz is not, and I mean true jazz, and I'm talking what music theorists consider jazz. I can fake that, but that is not my, man, that is not my my style. Uh-huh. It doesn't move me, and it doesn't feel very natural to me. And that's the one with like D7 flat 9, 11 diminished 13 chords and things like that. That's just too much. I like 1-4-5 rock. I mean, I like playing jazz, but I like playing blues, pop, kind of indie rock.
Well, you like Phil Collins back as
well. Oh yeah. I mean, yeah, Phil Collins, I was a big, I had the chance to see him on that last tour he did. And that was just an iconic moment, cause just such a legendary performer. But yeah, I think I was influenced not only, I think Phil Collins is a tremendous songwriter. So I didn't realize at the time, but what I loved were just the quality of the songs he wrote and then the big production. I loved that sort of polished pop music sound. He's an amazing drummer. I love anything with just great drums. And I mean, Phil Collins is a tremendous drummer, and his longtime touring drummer is Chester Thompson, who is a session player. I think he's also a professor at a college in Tennessee. And a good friend of mine from Berklee College of Music, a singer that I've worked with a lot, had Chester Thompson play on an album she released. And at the time, I'm like, oh, that's Phil Collins' drummer. Oh, my gosh. You know, I'm kind of just amazed by this. So
You're talking about it, Woodrow. And Lou Weitner shared a little thing with us that he said that you guys had a music theory class or something one year, and the teacher left, and you had subs quite often. Yeah. And one particular time you didn't have a sub and you kind of took the class over and was teaching people. You took bottles of water, I guess, and was blowing across the top to teach pitch.
I don't remember that specifically, but that sounds dead on for me. Yeah.
And he said that, you know, when you took over, they learned more in that class than any of the subs.
That's a funny comment, because I do not consider myself a great teacher at all. And in fact, I've had kind of young music. I played a church up in the Boston area. That's one of my two main jobs. And years ago, I had some of the kids in the church want me to give them music lessons. And that was really my first attempt at teaching music. And I've learned that you can be good at music and not good at teaching. And it's two very different skill sets. So the thought of someone saying that I taught them something well is kind of entertaining. But it sounds like I was kind of half goofing off and making it fun. And just maybe you learned something in the process. So that is the way that I would teach, as opposed to something structured.
Of course, high school was not without its antics. I've heard that you were paintballing night in a junkyard.
That's at my parents' house. My dad owned a construction company, and we were lucky enough to have what every kid dreams of behind their house, a giant junkyard full of dangerous equipment. It was wonderful. I think it sort of upped my survival instinct as a kid. It was great. Yeah. Yeah, we got into paintball one summer, and I feel like we were trying to recreate a movie scene. So we kind of created these burning barrels, and that was our light, because it was a dark night. I think we literally lit kerosene on fire in these barrels. It made sense at the time. And we were running around in the dark with paintball guns, and Jeff Sturgill tripped over something. Am I getting this back? No, I tripped over something, and Jeff was behind me, and he tripped over me and landed on top of me and broke my arm a little bit. So it was a very tiny fracture, and it just, at the time, it hurt a little bit. I just went back home, you know, 100 yards back to the house, and I told my mom, hurt my arm a bit, but it's fine. And she said, well, we'll see in the morning. And I woke up, and it was double its size in the morning. It was all swollen. I couldn't move it. And she's just, okay, in the car you go. And we went to like Doctors in Medicare on Harper Road or something. And I had it in a sling for a couple, maybe 4 or 5 weeks. It was a very tiny fracture. But
you had to miss some music engagements.
I'm sure I did, yeah. I don't remember what I missed specifically, but I'm sure at that time I would have been right in the middle of doing a lot of things. And I would not have been able to play. So.
Did you have any siblings?
I am a wonderfully fortunate only child who got pretty much everything they ever wanted. My parents were amazing, and my mom, who's still alive, is amazing. They encouraged me. You know, my dad owned a construction company, and some people asked, would he want me to follow in like the family business and his footsteps? And he gave me like one thing that was amazing about him, one of many things. He showed me all these different ways to make a living, just from watching. He was more of a teach by watching, not teach by telling me things. And he would just show me what he did for work and take me along on jobs sometime. And I would run a backhoe. You know, I probably made his job harder from like ruining things that he had done, because I would just play around in the backhoe. And, you know, I saw that aspect and I saw a lot of different things. But never once did he push me in any direction. And it was very clear from an early age, music is my passion. And, you know, if I needed, like with improv, you know, we needed a PA system. My dad just kind of quietly, like, yeah, what? Let's go to Pied Piper with something like this. You know, how's this look? And it would appear at the house. And I needed a new keyboard. And it would just, you know, a few weeks later kind of appear. And so they just saw the path I was on, and they just laid down all these resources along the way.
Yeah, I'd seen a quote that, or something you had written about your dad. Mm-hmm. It said, engineers trust numbers and measurements, but he also taught me to trust my heart and my instincts and to follow whatever path I felt was the correct one for me, regardless of what anyone else said. He was a good man, and I was a lucky kid. I miss him in different ways each year. He must have been a remarkable person.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And your mother, Linda, you actually made a CD for her one time for Mother's Day, I think.
Yeah, I think you said Linda. Sandy. Linda is actually my mother-in-law.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's okay. No, that's okay. Good old Linda. But, yeah, see, I've made them plenty of CDs, I'm sure. I'm trying to remember when that was, but... I mean, my mom just loves hearing me play music, and I've tried to sort of, over the years, I mean, just I did something recently, I'll come back to that in a second, but you're referring to probably a CD I made for Mother's Day, and just music for her to listen to as she drives around in the car, and even recently, I did something similar. They have prayer services up at United Methodist Temple, where she's extremely active, and they wanted some kind of just meditative piano music to have in the background. And I know she was having a hard time sort of finding stuff that was just kind of consistent and just the vibe they were looking for. So I just made them, you know, I just made a CD and probably 30 or 40 minutes of music of just kind of piano hymns and things like that. So
how did you get into Berkeley? Was the process exactly?
Okay, so... I think it was Jeff Sturgill, because this would have been my 10th or 11th grade year. You know, we're all starting to think of where we're going to go to college. And I think I had previously, my parents took me, we looked at Capital University in Ohio because they had a music production program. I think we looked at Oberlin, and I think that was a kind of more of a serious classical music school. And that is not my, I mean, I love classical music. I enjoy playing it, but that's not what I wanted to pursue. I'm not that type of serious musician. We briefly toured Juilliard in New York City, and that was just beyond, again, very structured, very serious. I'm not a very structured or serious person. And I think Jeff Sturgill had a brochure from Berklee College of Music in Spanish class at Woodrow. And I just the pictures of these beautiful studios. And I saw that, and then I said, that's where I want to be. And so I applied, and I made a demo cassette. They wanted to hear, I think, three different pieces. I think, I can't remember exactly, although I remember specifically one was a more contemporary kind of electronic music production. This would have been in 1996, I would have been making this probably. I just went all out. I don't remember what I did, but I made this crazy electronic sort of rock sort of track and sent that in. And I just remember, I actually can't remember when we heard back from them, but I remember getting like a big envelope in the mail. And usually the big envelope is a good sign. Basically, I think we went up to tour Berkeley. My family went, we stopped in New York City and then we took a vacation in Boston, I think the summer before my senior year. And I got to tour the Berkeley campus and absolutely fell in love with it. It just, at the time, it's interesting, growing up here in this beautiful sort of rural area, all I wanted when I was like 13 through 18 was to live in a big city. And then I lived in one and man, I missed the country. now it's a good balance. I live close to Boston, but I live about 15 miles outside of the city. We have woods, we have all of that. So that's nice. But I know I got off track here. The question was about Berkeley. I fell in love with the campus, kind of in the urban environment it was in. And just the equipment that would be available to me was just mind-blowing. And I know I had an interview with one of the staff members, one of the faculty. And
how tough was it in the school itself? I mean,
certain things were difficult, certain things were not. There are world-class musicians that I went to school with who are just unbelievable, and they're very famous now. And then there were people that were just like, honestly, like the kid who played guitar in high school and didn't know what real job he wanted. I mean, it didn't seem like the admissions process filtered a lot of that out. And there were, my first roommate dropped out within about 3 months. And I remember, nice guy, decent musician, but it didn't seem like he wanted to fully pursue that. And there were a handful of people who dropped out within the first year. I remember that. But the school itself, it was what you make it. You can sort of coast along. You can challenge yourself. The theory classes, we had classes called ear training, which is being able to hear pitch and just sort of knowing intervals. I have perfect pitch, so I tested into the highest one of those, and then I was done with that. I know some people had more difficulty with that. Berkeley started as a jazz school, and we've talked about how much I love jazz. It tried to move away from that, and it's more of a contemporary music school, but at the time I was there, at its heart, it's still very much a jazz school, and there's the way their harmony classes are structured is very much relating to jazz and these very complex harmonies. And that was surprisingly more of a challenge than I expected. Those classes, there's a lot of heavy theory involved. And those were kind of your core theory classes. And once those were out of the way, you were doing more of the fun, the studio recording and things like that. And I wouldn't say they were challenging, but you could sort of write your own story. You can kind of work extra hard. You can, for your music projects, you can try to do something incredibly complex, or you could just kind of do the standard path.
When you were there, you played in places like Berkeley's Performance Center. Yep. And the Harvard Club and the Westin Hotel. And I saw you on NBC Today.
Oh, my gosh. I found that video a couple of years ago. This is thanks to my dad. We visited New York City. I don't know if it was my first or second time because I was just upset. I'll tell you one of the things I wanted to do. My dream in high school was to be in the Saturday Night Live band. I loved that. I was obsessed with SNL. I thought their band was just world class. And I said, I would love to be a part of that. And then, so we took a vacation to New York City and my dad bought, basically I was upgrading my sax because I played alto saxophone as well. And that's what I played in high school band. And I had a nice sax, but in New York, my dad picked up the classified section, the gold standard of alto of saxophones, the Selmer Paris Mark VI, very expensive, very, you know, pretty rare. He found one across the river in New Jersey, and we got in our giant green van with West Virginia plates, drove over to New Jersey, and we met this guy in his apartment, and he sold, you know, my dad bought me a Selmer Paris Mark VI saxophone, and we wanted to go see a taping of the Today Show because, you know, they do the thing out in the street. He encouraged me to take my saxophone, and that is the last thing on earth I wanted to do. I'm not competitive. I don't like to call attention to myself. I think I'm surprisingly, I guess, shy in a way. I don't like to be the center of attention. And My dad like flagged down a producer or something that was just walking the street. And that day they were doing a theme. One of their little like feel good, like lifestyle story themes was on television show theme songs, kind of famous ones. And my dad just flagged down this producer and said, my son over there can play all these songs on the saxophone for you. And the producer comes over and said, just play me something real quick. And I did like the Addams Family theme or something. And he said, here's what we're going to do. We are going to, as we go to commercial breaks, we're going to walk a camera next to you. And you walk along with them while we're painting the crowd and play some old TV show theme song melodies. And we're live on national TV in 30 seconds. Here we go. And I said, okay. And I think 5 or 6 breaks, they just had me walk along. I'm in one of the shots. I think I may have spoken on camera. I don't remember that part. But I would just do the background music as they walked along the crowd. So yeah,
it was great. I was watching it. I mean, I saw it when it happened, and yeah. I said, I know that guy.
He oh my Beckley. Goodness, and that is so weird.
I think I told my wife. And we had I don't know what year that was. 2001 maybe.
No, because I would have been. Wait a second. Was I in college? No. It could have been 96, 97.
Okay.
I might have this wrong in my head, but I think I was, it might have been 1997 because I think I was between high school and college at that point.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah.
It could have been later. I'm not positive.
But now you played on CNN too, also presidential election.
Oh, so that was when I was at Berkeley. It was the 2000 presidential, well, I don't know that we were on. We might have been on CNN, but Berkeley sent a group of musicians to Washington, D.C. to play. I don't even know what we were playing for. We were just on a bus having a great time. And at Berkeley, I learned that connections is very important. And I made connections with some of the teachers who are in charge of the bigger productions. And that's why I, you know, did some of the graduation ceremonies, the Berkeley galas and the Performance Center shows. And just this one faculty member that I got along really well with, and he knew that he could throw a music chart in front of me and I would play it perfectly. I have a feeling it was some sort of a fundraiser for something with the college. But during the 2000 presidential election, we were in Washington, D.C. playing in some big hotel for something, and there were cameras there, and that's all I know. we were just having a great time. So I don't.
It must have been a sacrifice, though, for your parents when you went all the way to Boston. Is a long way from Berkeley, West Virginia.
Yeah.
And so that right there kind of tells you they really supported you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I still remember.
I know you decided to stay in the Boston area mm-hmm. after you graduated. Also, in 2007, you made an album called Be Still My Soul. Yeah. It was a CD, hymn and praise songs. Mm-hmm. And you had some local people around here that helped you.
Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure. I feel like Dan Bailey had something to do with that. I've done a couple of CDs, and I'm trying to think of that one. I want to say, oh my gosh, Becky Johnson, who is the wife of...
Yeah, Chrissy Almeida.
Oh, Chrissy Almeida,
Chip Atha.
Chip Atha, yeah, Chip's on it.
Yeah, and then I think there was somebody from your area, Castle Haneke.
Oh, Hanukkah Castle. Haneke. She is a world-class... Yeah, she went to Berkeley. She is a world-renowned fiddle player, violinist fiddle player. She played... Oh my gosh, what song? I can't remember which song. But yeah, I recorded her up there. Yeah, she's one of the... I know two of the best fiddle players in the world. Hanukkah Castle is one. Ooh. And my first college roommate was a guy named Casey Dreesen. And he won. I mean, you know, Dan Bailey called me a prodigy. If you want to see a prodigy, this Casey Dreesen guy just absolutely world class. And he has toured with, right now, he is touring with the Steve Martin and Martin Short. I don't know if you're familiar. Steve Martin is in addition to all of his comedy, is a really good musician and loves bluegrass, and he plays banjo. Absolutely. And my wife and I are actually seeing them at the Foxwoods Casino in Connecticut. They're doing this tour, and my friend Casey, I found out, is on the tour as kind of, he's the real virtuoso kind of fiddle player or mandolin or fiddle player in the background, just kind of ripping through that. So, yeah, that'll be... Yeah, I love to sidetrack you. So I know we were talking about Hanukkah on this album I did. But
so you stayed in Boston yes. because you got a job?
Yeah. So, yeah, I graduated in 2001. And my plan at the time, I had a handful of friends that moved to Nashville. And I had been... Berkeley every year did this trip for those who wanted to go to Nashville to get to tour the studios and record companies and just make some connections. And it was an amazing trip every year, and I just fell in love with Nashville. And I said that I think that might be what I want to do. And I was I was looking at apartments in Nashville, and I got a call from one of my former music production teachers at Berkeley saying, "Hey, there's a guy who just called me who's looking for someone who can play keyboard, who's a really good musician that understands music, who can do engineering, who can do some other things." And it made me think of you. This teacher's name is Steven Weber. And I said, "Okay, I'd love to, sure, I'll call him back." And I called this guy named Andy Villario. He had me up for an interview, and that was 2001. And this is 2023, and I'm still there.
Wow.
And
you're the head of the audio.
I'm the head audio producer. It's when I started, it was three employees. I was one of those three. A small company, small family-owned company. At the time, it was really more just radio and television jingles. Just production music, jingles. And that was kind of the thing he really enjoyed doing. And the company has grown. We are at probably 26 employees now. And we've expanded from doing just that to just full service production. So long story short, I do a lot of car commercials all over the country. We do other stuff too, but our specialty is automotive. And
well, you've been in a couple of commercials too, haven't you?
Well, sometimes there's no one else and we need someone. Yeah. actually, the most fun... My favorite thing I've done recently, my daughter and I are in a commercial, and it's one of our car dealer groups bought a group of car washes in the New England area, and they wanted a commercial where basically a family trashes the car and then they take it to this thing, and they needed a kid who can trash a car. And I immediately thought of my 9-year-old daughter, Kenzie. I said, "If you want to see someone trash a car, my daughter's got this, and she's cute and she'll look great on camera." And, they said, "Sure, let's." So we got her out of school one day and we had this TV shoot with her. We had a camera person in the passenger seat, and we used a stunt car. So it was not my car. It was actually my boss's wife's car, who at the time it was a Honda Odyssey. I had an identical car. And we drove around, and my daughter just ate donuts and dumped stuff in the backseat, threw donut sprinkles everywhere. And it was just a lot of fun. And then I ended up in the commercial because they needed a dad to sort of be like, you know, make these faces and everything and sort of react to her trashing the car. And I said, "Well, I guess I am a dad. I can do it." And so my daughter and I are in this commercial, and it's super cute. Yeah.
Your son is named Colin.
Colin, yep.
And are they're involved in other sports and things like
that? Yeah, so they're involved in way too many activities right now, and it's stretching us very thin. But they both my daughter and son love soccer. My son is a great soccer player. He is 12. I almost said 11. He just had a birthday in March. He's 12. My daughter's 9. So they both do sports, and then they do like karate. My daughter does dance, but they're both taking music lessons of various types. My son does piano lessons, and his piano teacher does a brilliant job of keeping him very interested by introducing a lot of electronic music. And he's actually learning like audio production using the same software I use at work. And again, this is something where just because you do something doesn't mean you can teach it. I've tried to teach him, and it's tough to teach your own child, I think. And I'm not a great teacher. So this guy just spends 30 minutes with him a week and just does an amazing job of, you know, making him really enjoy music. And just today, my son started, his school is offering guitar lessons, group guitar lessons before school. And so he's doing that. My daughter just started voice lessons. So yeah, it's...
We got a future.
Yeah, we got a future happening. And it's 7 days a week we're doing something. My schedule is trying to get the right kid to the right place in the right uniform or with the right instrument. it's a tough job.
Well, what is a typical day of work?
So when the pandemic happened, we all went home. I got to learn that I really enjoyed working from home. And I sort of turned my basement was already kind of a little bit of a studio. I got some of the equipment from my office and set it up. And so to this day, I am still primarily working from home in my basement. I have a nice little kind of recording space and mixing space. And I found that I work more efficiently out of my house, because when you have 26 people in an office, we had a lot of just great personalities and wonderful people, and we had a lot of fun. So we goofed off a lot, and there were a lot of distractions. So I'm actually more focused at home. But yeah, a typical day is going downstairs, and we do new music for people it's sporadic, but it could be once a week. It could be once a month. So a lot of what I actually do is taking existing jingles we've done for our clients and getting new voiceovers for it. And we've got a handful of voiceover people. Our main guy is actually in Mesa, Arizona, and I send him scripts, and in an hour he sends me back these amazing voiceovers, and I drop them in the music. I sync everything up, make sure it matches the script, send it off to our video people. So that's one component of what I do. I do occasionally go into the studio for vocal sessions, or if we have clients that come record their own voiceovers, I'm not going to have them in my house, so we go in the real studio. But I branched out a little bit. We do a lot of automotive, and they love drone photography. You know, they love drone shots of the dealerships, and we found ourselves paying these drone pilots tons of money to get footage that was kind of, it wasn't the greatest. And I've always loved aviation. I always kind of wanted to be a pilot just as a hobby, and owned a small drone. And, you know, I got to be really good at it. And I said, you know what, I think I can do a better job. And I have an FAA pilot's license as a remote pilot for drones. I'm a commercial licensed drone pilot. And my company bought me a nice $10,000 drone. And I'll occasionally go do drone photography for different car dealerships around New England. Wow. So, and I actually love it because I like being out and about and doing something different every day. So that's, some days I might be in my basement. Some days I might be holding a boom mic at a television shoot at a car dealership. Some days I might be driving up to Maine to fly a drone to get, you know, aerial video of.
We had stuff. A guy here on here a while back, Randy Hunt. Is a commercial drone. And yeah. He sells real estate.
Oh, okay.
And it just works out.
Oh, that works out beautifully. Yeah, that's great. And, wow, that's fine.
Great. I heard this, that you were music director at the church.
I am. I am the music director of Community United Methodist Church. Okay. And it's in Wayland, Massachusetts, which is probably 12, 15 miles outside of Boston. I was going to say it's about 30 minutes. There's a joke that Boston is an hour's drive from Boston. So I just, yeah. The point being, you never know what the traffic is going to be like, but it's, I've been there. So I had this job at this church before my main job at Media Results, which is the advertising job.
You guys kind of do a variety of everything from Mozart to the Gaithers and whatever.
Pretty much. Yeah. They love a wide variety of music, and they've always been very receptive to anything I've wanted to do, even if it's a little crazy. And I started as the accompanist. We had another choir director, and then I became the accompanist. And her name, Betty Nelson was her name. She was tremendous. And she retired, and they were looking for a new music director. And my good friend Chrissy Sellards, who now lives in, I met Chrissy in college, and we became friends and sort of musical, we worked together musically, like a longtime collaborator. And she moved to Beckley, of all things.
Really?
And she's here now. She's actually she may sing a song with me at this United Methodist Temple 40th anniversary tomorrow, which will be a lot of fun. But I kind of got her in as the choir director for the church. I said, hey, you would be really good at this. And so she was the director for a number of years. And then when she left, she moved to Beckley. we were looking for a new director, and I sort of took over as the interim director just to sort of fill the gap. They said, hey, you're doing a great job with this. Why don't you just be the director? And I said, well, I guess I'm the director now. So, and that's been a number of years, and it's a lot of, I mean, it's deceptive how much work it is planning the music, just every week. They're like, you know, you don't really get to rest. Every week you have to keep picking music.
You can't please everybody.
And oh my gosh, no, I stopped trying. Although I will say I'm very fortunate. The people at my church are incredibly receptive. My complaint jar is usually very small in terms of, you know, not pleasing everyone. But yeah, that's very true. And I went through a phase where I was trying to please everyone, and I was miserable. You can't do that. And I kind of got over that. And I said, you know, I'm going to do what I think is right and what the majority of the people will enjoy. And we've gone contemporary, and we've sort of gone back to a hybrid of, we'll do some contemporary stuff, but it's a lot of the old familiar, just the median age of my church is a little older, and it's comfort for them. These hymns they grew up with, they still want to hear them, and they like hearing some new ones as well. So we do some old, some new, and just try to mix it up.
The church that I go to was, they primarily play contemporary music and great artists. I mean, and most of the people that go to the church are 35 and under.
Okay.
But I like the music. But I would like to hear an old hymn every once in a while.
Yeah, I mean, I like contemporary Christian music a lot. I like old hymns a lot, and I think musically, I love a lot of the way the contemporary hymns are structured. I think they're very powerful. There's a lot of kind of building up, and it just gets bigger and bigger, and you just kind of feel a power as it builds up, and I love that feeling. But I think, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that contemporary Christian music doesn't have a lot of great lyrical content, but some of it can be really vague, and it's just surface content, whereas a lot of the old hymns have, you know, a lot, they're lyrically deeper. So I think there's a very significant place for that as well. Yeah.
Well, speaking of years, you just recently had an anniversary, I guess, not too long ago.
Are you referring to getting married with my wife, or?
Yeah, with
your wife. Oh my gosh, yes. Well, we just celebrated actually 11. Oh my gosh, I got to get this right because I know she'll listen. I didn't know there would be math. Yes, we just had our 11th anniversary. Yeah.
And you wrote on Facebook, just celebrated 11 years of marriage. Marriage is not a thing that happens on a single day in a building. It's a thing that builds and grows over a lifetime. And I couldn't ask for a more perfect person to be with me on that journey. Do you realize what you've done to us peons?
Oh, husbands? My gosh. I've got to tell you this.
That's beautiful.
Oh, thank you so much. I communicate better by writing. I'm a better writer than a speaker. And I think a lot of times, you know, I'm more romantic to her on Facebook in a public forum, because that's where I just write better than, I probably wouldn't say that to her face always. I mean, I do, but so I'll put these things on Facebook, and then we'll be dropping our kids off from school, dropping our kids off at school. And the other moms are like, Dave, that was so sweet. You know, what you wrote for Allie. And then I'll see like their husbands in another group over here, and they're like, Dave, I hate you. You know, there's like a level of expectation. They said, oh, now we have to do that.
So. Is it true that you spent hours with another audio engineer trying to properly mic the flush of a commode?
Probably. Oh, yes. Wait, are we talking about a long time ago?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. John Sellards, who is amazing. He lives here in Beckley, as I'm sure you know. He recorded my band Improv. So... He had MacArthur Bark Studios over sort of in downtown Beckley. The first Improv album, which we still have cassettes of available. It's actually, I may have put it on Spotify. I don't remember. But we just had a great time. That was a great experience learning how to make an album with him. And he, what I loved about John is I didn't quite know what to make of him, because he was either the oldest kid I knew or the youngest adult at the time. We didn't know if he was a kid or an adult, I guess. And he was just a few years older than us. But he brought this experience, and he really produced the album. He told us, he said, hey, try this. This might sound better if you did that. So it was a great learning experience. And we had we were just goofy, and we had this song called Oops, I Dropped the Cat. And it was just a ridiculous song with a lot of sort of Latin percussion. And, you know, we're 16-year-olds with weird senses of humor, and we thought it would be great to have a toilet flush at the end of the song, because that is just how we felt at the end of the song. We're like, all right, get rid of that one. And I just remember John, there's this toilet in the studio, so we just mic'd it. And I remember John spinning, you know, we thought he would just stick a mic in front of it, flush it, and we'll be done. And I don't know how many hours he spent getting it, just because it didn't sound quite right. So he'd move the mic a little bit and just maybe put it closer, put it farther away. So yeah, that definitely happened.
What do you have on your bucket list? You're a young guy. What do you got that you want to accomplish or do? Or?
Yeah. Travel. Travel just overseas. That's the biggest thing I feel like I've missed out on that I wish we had done sooner. I wish my wife and I had more thought to travel overseas before we had kids, because it's definitely harder with kids. Yeah. And that just, we were both kind of adventurers. We love seeing new places. And it's tough to travel. And my wife's mom lives with us, which is a blessing. But it's hard for her to travel too. And one of the wonderful things about having my mother-in-law with us is she's able to watch the kids, and my wife and I can go out for dinner in Boston or something like that. But we would feel very guilty leaving her for several days for like more of an overseas trip. So at this point, we're actually, we need to get passports for our kids, and we might take them to Canada later this year, possibly just as a, you know, just a new adventure. And then when they're a little older and when they would appreciate it more, would like to do somewhere in Europe. So it's, yeah, I have a feeling you phrased that question more from like a musical or a professional standpoint. And I've done a lot of the things that I've played on some big stages with some big artists. I've played with some of my best friends who are just amazing musicians, and just musically, I'm very fulfilled. I mean, there was a point where I would have loved to go on like a national tour with a band. At this point in my life, I don't feel the need to do that.
Yeah. When I heard the Social Vision, the Let It Be.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was beautiful.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, that sent chills up my
spine. Yeah, that, we recorded that very early in the pandemic. And actually, was that... I can tell you actually a little of the backstory. A good friend of mine is a guy I went to Berkeley with named Matt Mangano. He is now the bass player in the Zac Brown Band. And I know that when the pandemic happened, that sort of financially ruined, Zach owns a studio in Nashville called Southern Ground. And that sort of just, they lost their bookings. They had a ton of money tied up in the studio. And I think something happened, and I want to say they had to sell it, or say they may have it back now, but don't quote me on this exactly. I don't know if that's true, but they were sort of losing their home studio, their beautiful studio that they made all these albums in. And we had a text chain going. We have a Berkeley text group, and Matt was mentioning that, and someone just posted a link to the song Let It Be. It felt like the right song in the moment. And I think the next day, Chris, who's the singer and guitarist on that, who's a good friend of mine from Berkeley, said, hey, we should do, we should try to do one of these socially distanced songs together. And Chris just sent a demo track, and it's funny, I'm the only one with my family in it, because at the time, his vision was, you know, we're all in lockdown and we're all home with our families, and let's sort of show that. And this, like, I pictured people more sitting on their couch and their kids are around them singing. And so I was the first person to record my keeper tracks. And I have my wife sitting on the bench next to me. My kids are around me as I'm playing the organ. That's the video I sent them. And then everyone else just did it in their just by themselves. So I'm the only one who understood the assignment. They changed it after the fact. But yeah, those are just, Chris is a longtime collaborator of mine. And I think he's just one of my favorite songwriters and musicians. But I love, that's one of my favorite sort of COVID videos where he performed
that
I've done. Yeah,
And I know you guys have had some backyard festivals and some
yep.
festivals,
yep.
And it looks like you're looks like you're enjoying life. And
I enjoy that more than being on a big stage at this point in my life. I would love maybe one more big stage show at some point, but because it's a lot of fun. And I used to love coming in and playing with TaylorMade, the band TaylorMade. They performed at like the car shows, and they've done a few bigger concerts around this area. That's a lot of fun, but I've learned I just love making music with my friends. That's what I always did growing up. That's the thing that one of the things that brings me the most happiness musically. So, you know, I don't care if we've got 10 people watching, 30, 100, 1,000. If I'm with my friends making music, I'm having a great time.
Yeah. Listen, Dave, our time's about up.
All right.
Man, and I've enjoyed
it. Yeah.
It flies, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, it really does.
And I appreciate you stopping by and talking to us.
That's my pleasure, Wayne. Thank you so much for having me. I love that you're recording this oral history of, you know, just I've enjoyed listening to these, and I hope you continue to do this for a long time. This is great.
Well, hopefully you'll come back and talk to us
again. I will absolutely do that. I'll be back later in the summer with my family, and maybe probably in August sometime. I'd love to stop by then.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, and I thank you very much. And anybody else out there that would like to be on our show or program, we would be glad to have you. Just email me at awbennett50@gmail.com, and we'll get you on here. And until next time, remember, if you're not dead yet, you're not done yet. And God bless you.